Hi, I'm Gemma Watts, and this is Uncommon.
This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media. Play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON. Welcome to another episode of Uncommon. My name's Jordan Michaelides and I'm your host. In this episode, I have for you Gemma Watts. Gemma is the director of Glow Journal Creative, editor of the Glow Journal, and all-round skin and beauty analyst. Her wit and wisdom, crafted through a passion for writing and forged at brands such as L'Oreal and Couturing, have given Gemma a unique set of attributes to pare back the world that is beauty and the business that makes this industry go around. I think although she's been around for a while, she's still early in her career and will definitely be someone to watch in this space. We covered a lot in this episode, as per usual, including the Tigers, who recently won their second flag in the last few years, growing up and school bullies, entrepreneurial spirit, working on her writing craft, rather, starting the Glow Journal, the business of beauty as well. If you like the episode, do leave us a rating on your podcast app. We love reading them on Chartable and Apple Podcasts. If you want a shout out, do so before next week, particularly as we'll be traveling in Japan. So I'll be batching a bunch of introductions as well. If you want to share with your friends, take a screenshot, post on your Instagram story, tag us at @uncommon_show. Thanks very much for those who message us each week. We love hearing from you guys. If you want to watch the episode in full, search Uncommon Show on YouTube and don't forget to like and subscribe. Show notes and all previous guests are at neural.com/podcasts. With that being said, thanks for listening, guys, and let's get into the episode with Gemma Watts. Gemma.
Party time.
We're here.
We are.
Queen of the daily talk show and maybe even Uncommon.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have to discuss that with the boys. I'm happy to be queen of anything, but I just don't want to like cause any fighting.
Step on toes and whatnot.
There's been such drama about it already. I just,
really?
I didn't ask for it, but I do love the attention. So
now,
it's fine.
Tell me about this intrigue in Taco Bell. Is it Bell or Bill?
Bill. Yeah. Bell is the American one.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a whole lot to say. I mean, it's the McDonald's of Mexican food.
Okay.
It's, yeah, what Mamacita is very different to Taco Bell. It's just easy.
Why Taco Bell, though?
Because Chris is obsessed with it and has been for a really long time.
Okay.
It's not my choice.
Mm.
I'm like, let's go somewhere different. He's like, no.
So how regularly will you go?
Oh, I want to say monthly.
Oh, okay. So it's not too bad.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
Josh has really just made it sound like it's a whole.
Yeah, he likes to exaggerate things.
But he also thinks I'm an alcoholic, but.
Really?
Yeah, that's probably fair.
Does he drink though?
Josh?
Yeah.
Josh has had like 6 glasses of red wine in his life and he's like, I think I need to cut back.
Yeah.
And Tommy isn't drinking for the whole of 2019.
Really?
So, yeah. Okay. I mean, I did their show Hungover once.
Right. That's interesting. I love when you chat to different people and you are different things to different people, which
yeah.
We'll get into later because I do like that though. I like it when you speak to those different groups and they think they've got you in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Which is funny.
Well, they thought that and then they took me to the footy and they were like, oh, we know nothing about you. You're leading a double life.
Tell me about this passion for the Tigers. Is it recently reinvigorated or is it just always, like, were you there in the dark years, like the 90s,
yes.
The early 90s?
Oh, my God. Yes. Being called a bandwagoner is truly the most offensive thing. Yeah, so my grandfather, Leo Maguire, played in the 43 Premiership team. That was when Jack Dyott was the captain. So my family is pretty obsessed. Okay. Like, if you don't vote for Richmond, you don't get Christmas, which I think is fair. But I hadn't seen a premiership in my lifetime until 2017, so it was very emotional.
Yeah.
Mum and I cried. And I'm not a crier, so it was like a whole – it was a lot.
Really?
Mm.
I remember, you know, we were chatting before about the fact that my family barracks for St Kilda and
– Yeah, you get it.
I totally get it. Mm. Like, as an example, in 2009 when we lost to Geelong, my dad, who – is like me, a bit of a lightweight, isn't a massive drinker.
Can't relate.
Yeah. He didn't come home for a good 24 hours. My mum was genuinely worried. Yeah, he went out to Crown.
You would be.
Yeah, she was. She's like, have you seen your father? Oh. I'm like, no.
No, he's in jail.
It was very, very odd. And I just remember, yeah, it's that plus, I think 2010, so my mum barracks for Collingwood.
Okay.
So, naturally, I have to support Collingwood at the moment, which is very tough mm-hmm. because my sister's godfather, who's my dad's best mate, is like a fanatic Richmond supporter.
Man, I'm
going to
need some sort of family tree because I'm already lost.
Yeah. It's just the whole football thing is what has bound most of our family together. It's
I
like
get
the
that.
One, you know, like in a lot of WOG families, it starts with sport and it ends in politics.
Oh, God.
If that makes sense.
We don't talk politics.
Really?
Yeah. Politics and money, we just, like, don't really talk about it.
Really?
Mm.
Why?
No reason. It's just, I don't know. It's just not, like...
Just not a thing?
No. My family bonds, like, the big family, mum's one of seven. I think what brings us together is just partying, which is fine.
Do you have, like, a particularly early memory of your childhood?
Parties.
Yeah?
There's, yeah, my whole childhood, because I'm an only child.
Yeah.
My parents had me, like, a bit later in life, and they're just the most social people I have ever met, so they would just put me in the capsule. Is that what it's called, a capsule?
Yeah.
They would just put me in the capsule and just, like, plonk me under the table.
Put you on the stereo, the subwoofer.
Yeah, they did that. When I was too young to be, you know, sitting on an amplifier. But that's fine. But that's my earliest memories are definitely that.
Mm. Is there a particular party moment that stands out? Like, as an example,
yeah.
Like my parent, it sounds like you and Lauren had a very similar childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when did your, how old was your mum when you were born?
She's 61 now and I'm 26.
Okay.
And dad is about to turn 72.
Yeah. So Lauren's dad's nearly 70 uh-huh. and her mum's about, I think her mum had her when she was like 36 or 38.
Yeah.
It was one of those. I always forget. But yeah, only child, very similar thing. I feel like only children are quite mature because
by necessity.
Well, you've
got to grow up quicker because we, like, obviously, I had friends that were my age, but my parents have, like, a lot of friendship groups, and then those friendship groups have merged because
yeah.
they just love to bring people together, which I, like, I love that about them. But I just, you know, I had to sit at the grown-up table. And
yeah. Well, it's sort of like you there's only one of you.
Yeah.
So there's not much of an issue. So it's just easier than get a babysitter to bring you along
yeah.
and make you be good in that room over here away from all the adults.
Precisely. Yeah, I never really had a babysitter. Occasionally my nan would come over, but it was just – they would just take me to parties.
Did you find that – not that you were agreeable, that because I know that you seem quite assertive, but do
you – it's putting it really politely.
Did you find that, like – you would always do what your parents said? Because I've noticed that with Lauren, that there's sort of just an understanding, whereas in my family, it's like we're complete skeptics. Like, whatever our parents say, it's just we'll do the absolute opposite.
No, I mean, I think I definitely did what they said, but I don't think they ever asked anything particularly wild of me.
Hmm.
Like, I wasn't super rebellious because I didn't have to be. They would, like, there were boundaries, but they were like, do whatever the fuck you want. Just don't, you know.
Yeah.
Don't embarrass us.
Is there a lesson that you've learned from either of your parents that you feel like you still use today?
Yeah, definitely. Because so the big thing that I've taken from them isn't a lesson, but I just, them being so social, I think, like, that's who I am now. I love to entertain.
Yeah.
Obviously. So there's that, but then I think a specific lesson. I was bullied pretty bad early primary school, and I still so wanted to be friends with the girl that was bullying me. And they were like, why? Not everyone has to like you. Like, that's that it doesn't matter. And so from there, I've just, that's pretty much how I go about life. I'm like, that's cool. No one has, like, as long as you're just being kind to people and not being a dick,
yeah,
it doesn't matter.
But it's interesting the way that you went with that, because, like, I've got in here, you, I don't know if you've read it upside down, but
no, I haven't.
The topic is defining Gemma. Right? And I feel like there are a few things that really stand out. I mean, the obvious one that you spoke about is your early childhood, but
yeah,
the whole drama and performance element. I think bullying was a key thing, because I had that at a very early age as well. The difference was that I just wanted to be everyone's friend.
Right.
And that may be that, like, I find myself assertive, but maybe there's like an agreeable element to that. I don't know what it is, but I'm always sort of seeking for approval of people.
Right.
Particularly people that are close to me, which is interesting because I could have gone the other way. And I still definitely. Don't, like, total strangers, I don't give it a fuck. I really, really don't care.
For me, it was just that I was an easy target. I was shy for the first couple of years of school. And I mean, that's just kind of, that's how bullies operate. Who's the easy target?
What was the thing that you got bullied for?
I don't know if it was a specific thing. The catalyst was definitely that myself and two girls that I'm still very good friends with had a band, and another girl, she hadn't asked to be in it. If she had, I'm sure we would have said yes, but she was not thrilled with that. So I have a very vivid memory of her standing on top of a staircase, and she'd passed around during, what do you call first period in primary school? Just the time before play lunch.
A homeroom sort of activities.
Something like that.
Yeah.
She said, I have an important announcement to make at the start of my lunch. Everyone's going to be there. This is grade three. Who the fuck is this? Anyway, so we all gathered at the bottom of the stairs, and she pulls out an imaginary note. She didn't have a piece of paper. She was just holding her hand up as
like
though.
This.
Yeah. But being 7 or 8 years old, we're all like, sure, this is a thing.
Oh, this is real, yeah.
And now I'm going to read out the names of everyone that complied with me at lunchtime, and read out every person's name that was there except
yours.
Yeah, and then did, like, sort of peered over and went, looks like that's it.
Wow.
Good times.
But that I feel like when you have that at a young age, you're given an insight into sort of the realities
of
adult life quite early.
Yeah. I mean, I worked out, I made friends after that because I had to. I know what upset my mum was the two girls that were my best friends at the time kind of went along with it.
Uh-huh.
I cottoned on from a young age that there are always going to be people that are followers, and I'm still friends with those girls, and they did eventually apologize. That didn't bother me. I was like, there is a ringleader, and she's preying on people that are weaker than her, which is a big, you know, to realize age 7. But
I think so, yeah.
I don't know. I'm just pretty intuitive.
Yeah, I remember I had that at two different schools, but for me it was when I was actually at high school. I mean, I originally had it at primary school, but at high school –
I had the best time in high school.
Did you?
Yeah, I loved it.
But the funniest thing is I became friends with these guys. And a lot of the it was just, I start to realize that bullying is just like the person is either really jealous or envious. Maybe is a better word.
I think that, but I didn't want to say it about myself.
Yeah.
I didn't want to sound
so it's either they're envious or they're just like most bullying or discrimination is an unassuredness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, I other than that, it was just grade three was a shit time, but other than that, I had a great time the whole way through school.
Yeah.
But I'm like a chronic overachiever and really in people's faces about it.
I think the other three things that I had here was writing.
Yeah, that's my first love.
Audience and commercialization.
Commercialization is an interesting one.
Yeah, we'll get into that. Okay. But I think the writing thing is key because I've learned just by doing this whole project that the ability to collect your thoughts is what writing gives you.
Mm.
And it also does it for when you are there in the moment. Like, as in, you know, when you're writing and Most of the time I've got all these notes, right?
Mm.
But I don't actually, I'm not reading from them.
No.
One by one. It's just all here in my head and I've collected
It's nice to have something tactile.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I felt that writing has always been that medium for that.
Mm.
I feel like the audience thing is interesting because you had to build an audience to be doing what you're doing
now. Absolutely.
And the commercialization thing is you deciding to go do something on your own. Because you could have easily gone and worked at any other place.
Definitely.
So I think that maybe we'll call it entrepreneurial in a way.
Well, I mean, that I would agree with because I only in the last probably 12 to 18 months really thought about it. But when I was, like, you know, 4 or 5, I would hustle my parents for pocket, like I wanted more pocket money. They've always been very, you know, you can have whatever you want if you work for it. And I looked at the pocket money that I was earning from doing chores and thought, okay, this is not enough to buy Britney Spears' Hit Me Baby One More Time debut album. So I set up a day spa in our spare room and I would come in and like give them a facial. But being 4, it was just me sort of tapping them on the face with a bar of soap. But
why day spa? Why was that the thing?
I don't know. I've always been fascinated with beauty. I do not know where it comes from. But that was my thing. So that was job number one. Job number two, which I did not get paid for. It was self-published. I had a What's Family newsletter for myself and my parents and no pets at that stage, which then became a fashion magazine. I would cut out things from like mum's discarded magazines and then put new outfits together. And then by high school, I made money for the canteen by coding people's MySpaces for them.
That's right. I remember either I read that or I'm pretty sure I read that on the Vogue interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was my first sort of experience with tech. And then from there, I got a lot of shit for it, but I got into photography really early.
Okay. What were you shooting on back then?
When I was in primary school, I was shooting on film because I learned my first camera was a Box Brownie. I learnt on film. Then when digital cameras came out, they're just point and shoot. That really bored me. Then I got my first DSLR. I think I was 15.
Okay.
And then I would take that everywhere. Parties, school excursions, everywhere.
Sounds a lot like Lauren.
Well, I just had in the back of my head, there is a way to monetize this. I mean, and I just loved posting photos on MySpace. It worked because eventually all of my friends who had older siblings were like, if we slog your friend Gemma $50, can she take photos at my 18th birthday party or my 21st or whatever it would be? So it worked.
What was the if you think about the peak of MySpace, what was your song?
Oh, I know this because it was the Psycho theme because everyone had like fun poppy songs and I loved the idea of people going on my page and just this very jarring horror film score.
That's so fucking funny.
Yeah, which is also my favourite film. I don't know what that says about me.
Scream, did you say?
Psycho.
Psycho, what I was going to say.
Scream is fine.
Yeah, Scream is like a comedy movie, isn't it?
No, it's not for me.
Okay, that's interesting. I just remember, who was that French singer, Yell? Remember when Yell, YELLE, that was like peak, that was like the peak of her powers. I remember Lauren had the best MySpace.
Lauren's cool.
Yeah. That was the thing that like I really, I just realized she was a bit kooky in that regards. Like she, like I said, her dad had a lot of old film cameras.
Yeah, that's sick.
Like a lot of old
Lakers. Is it Lakers possible Lauren and I have the same dad?
Possibly. What's your dad's background?
He's from the UK.
Okay.
I've got a UK passport just sitting there. I really need to like
use Yeah, so it. Does she. Her mum's from the UK.
Oh, there you go.
But her dad's German. I'll have to show you there's this really cool map that we've got that they gave us recently that was her opas. It's sort of like a big old USSR map. She's really into film and I think it was the same thing. She sort of just really liked that archetype.
Yeah.
And her dad is a real character. Like I call him a rooster and he'll be listening to this. He'll be actually probably fun. Watching it on YouTube down on the peninsula on his big TV. Hi, Charles. And he's just a real character. He loves being a a character.
Yeah,
but he's quite an introvert.
My parents identify as introverts. But in the sense that neither of them are shy.
Shy, but they don't like being out too long, right?
It's the way that you take in your energy. So for me, if I'm just in my own space for too long, then I feel down. But being around people, like I'm up at the moment because I'm talking.
Yeah.
Whereas they just got back from a month in Europe and they just needed a day to just sort of sit.
And recuperate.
Yeah, because they were with all their friends. They were basically on schoolies.
Okay.
So they were like, we just need to sit.
Schoolies for 60-year-olds.
Yeah, but they go hard. they had people over last night. I heard those people leave at 2 o'clock this morning.
Jesus.
Mm. That's normal. That doesn't like I'm.
Wow. See, yeah. Charles is the type that if it – unless, of course, they got people over, but if it hits like 10, 30, 11 – he's like calling over the waiter for the bill. He's like, all right, let's go.
Oh, see, they will call over the waiter for the bill and then say, come back to ours. Whereas I have no problems saying to people, hey, it's time for you to get the fuck out of my house.
Yeah, he's proper done by about 10:30, 11, which is hilarious because then he'll go and sleep on the couch. Or even better, when we're trying to get to sleep at theirs, because we're actually going down this weekend. We could probably go down once a month to theirs. And he will blast Netflix on 60 or 70, watching some documentary of some kind, which is always fun for getting to sleep at 1 a.m.
Yeah, that's what you want. Bruce Watts loves a disco nap. Like, he will sit in a chair, fall asleep. Yeah, exactly like that. And then he will pop back up
cross-legged?
For a dance.
Does he sit cross-legged as well?
It varies.
Okay.
It varies.
I can picture your dad already. I've never seen him.
He looks like me, Tom Selleck.
Okay.
He's a handsome man. And I keep hearing things about him as a 20 and 30 year old, and I'm like, I don't need to hear this.
Yeah, I'd say that I think it would be agreeable that Charles is a bit of a handsome man too. That's why we call him the rooster. Got the puffed out chest.
Yeah,
pigeon chest, I think is what Lauren calls it. But on the writing part, I found it really interesting how you decided to go to TAFE to learn to write better.
Yeah.
Best decision ever. I know, because it was here that you met this audience that said you need to be going out and doing shit.
Mm.
Do you think, what was the thing that made you think, all right, I really want to go to RMIT, I want to hone this craft?
So my godmother, who left my house at 2 o'clock this morning, she has worked for Channel 9 forever. So that was like my after school care. There would be a show and they'd be like, we need a kid, and they'd just sort of plonk me in there, like one of those machines with the claw. They'd just pick me up by the head and just drop me in. She had always said everyone that they hired for anything in media went to RMIT.
Okay.
I'm one of those sickos that knew what they wanted to do from like day one.
And why?
I popped out of the womb and I was like, I'm going to be in media.
Okay.
And they were like, okay, this is not normal.
Why was that? What was the archetype? Who was the person that you looked up to and you thought, that is me?
There was no specific person, but definitely being around television, I just loved that environment. And it just made sense because the things that I loved to do from, you know, I started dancing at age 3. I loved to have an audience.
Mm-hmm.
I loved to write. So, you know, that's a media career. I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a getaway host. That's what I've written in our grade 6. Like, where will I be?
God, remember the days of like getaway and postcards being the pinnacle?
Yeah, I looked at Katrina Rowntree and thought,
Wow.
She looks amazing. She's still doing it.
Yeah.
So I knew I wanted to do that, and Kate had said RMIT is the place to go for that. I figured out in high school that what I wanted to do was write.
Okay.
And I was really fucking good at it. I won like state writing awards, the whole thing. But I still loved an audience, like primary school captain, junior school captain, middle school captain, vice school captain, pipped at the post, but that's fine. I'm not salty about it. So I looked at journalism. It was a 99.5 enter, I think, the year that I was in year 12. I was very academic, but I was like, well, that's not going to happen.
What did you do in year 12? What were your topics? You would have done drama for sure, right?
No, I didn't. Really? I did.
Did you do the school play, though?
Absolutely. I was the comedic sidekick. I was never the female lead. I was always the one that they'd wheel in. And in fact, I played a prostitute in a few of them. And then my speech, my school captain's speech at the start of year 12, the other captains, who I'm still friends with them all, they were like, come on, guys, it's going to be a really good year. We're going to work hard. I got up and said, hey, guys, I've been cast as a prostitute in the last 3 school musicals. So if you think you've got it bad, look at me. So that was really motivational for them. I wanted to do all 3 Englishes and they said, don't you dare. I did English. I did literature.
What was the 3rd English?
English language.
Okay, they didn't offer that to us.
English language at... There was a stigma when we were going into VCE that English language was, in inverted commas, the dumb English, but it wasn't. I ended up tutoring it when I finished school, and it's very, like, an analytical take.
Really?
Yeah. I wish I'd been able to do all 3.
More grammar-based?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I then went on to study. I wish I'd done it. But, English, literature, media, studio art, French.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
And a lot of those get marked down, unfortunately. Studio art.
All of them. Yeah. All of them do.
French.
I did not care. I pushed back on doing maths in year 11 and they said, because I'd been like ducks of maths and science and they were like, you've got to do it. And I said, well, just because I'm good at it doesn't mean I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, if it were any other student, we'd be like, you have to do 1 unit of maths. But... Nah.
They let you get
away. Yeah, I think everyone knew that I knew what I was doing. I'm like, just trust me on this. And my parents were very much in my corner. They're like, she's not going to do maths.
Well, you must have been quite persuasive. I mean, you must have had quite a conviction as to what you were going to do.
I think I've got a bit of sparkle. I think they were like, yeah, okay, she's fine.
A few jazz hands. A few jazz hands and...
But I knew from those subjects, you're not going to get 99.5. It's not going to happen. But I also didn't know what kind of writer I wanted to be, and I just don't think you can learn that from being in a lecture theatre. So we went to one of the open days and one of those careers fairs. RMIT TAFE had a course that they still have. When I was there, it was a Cert 4 and a diploma. Now it's an associate degree.
Yeah.
Professional writing and editing. So it was... a classroom not dissimilar to my year 12 class sizes. I did the big one that we had to take was editing,
okay,
which I loved. I took a column writing. I took a fiction writing class. I took writing for radio. I just took every possible class. There was a photography elective, which naturally I blitzed because I was already doing it. So I just kind of honed my skills there, and I was the baby of everyone in the course. Most of them were mature age students who had come back as a skill refresher.
Uh-huh.
And they all said, you know, a portfolio is more important in media than anything. Yeah, than anything. So
I think from there that was when, I mean, I was trying to piece it together. So there was
so many things happening at once. So if you've...
The Caramel and Universal magazine.
But
I feel like it was the couturing job. Because the couturing, you went from contributing fashion writer to assistant fashion writer to editor. Assistant fashion editor to editor. But it was also
it's the space of like a couple of months too.
I know, right?
And I was 18.
I was looking at the time and I'm like, fucking hell.
I was 19 when they promoted me to fashion editor.
But it was the L'Oreal thing.
Yeah, I got headhunted.
That was and I feel like for you that would have been now in hindsight, not at the time, but in hindsight, amazing because, you know, as this has been for me personally, sometimes when you do a thing that's sort of deviated from your current area, it can actually open up to what you really, really, really enjoy.
100%. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So I started interning and just submitting articles for publication. That's where Caramel and Universal came into play. then, and I had a blog as well that I think is, I'm glad you didn't uncover it.
Jim K. Watts?
No. No, it was The Girl in the Sea after a Presets song.
Okay.
I was very
love
indie.
The Presets. Sounds like Lauren.
She's so cool. Yeah. So I got a job as a, when they were in their infancy, and okay. they were it in Melbourne. They were like the people to write for.
Yeah.
So I thought I was a sick bitch. I was 18, got promoted to, yeah, assistant fashion editor, then fashion editor in a matter of months. Then after a couple of years of that, I think L'Oreal headhunted me. So they had – their company structure is very confusing, but basically they had an advertorial platform.
Okay.
They
– advertorial being so it was, ad-driven
it
writing.
It was all written to look like a beauty magazine, but yeah. at the end it would say, you know, get the look with the following L'Oreal products.
Yeah. So similar to broadsheet.
Like
a broadsheet is a very advertorial.
Yeah, broadsheet now. Yeah. Not broadsheet.
Back in the day.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, it's a clever way to advertise. So they had, that platform was managed by Paris.
Okay.
So they had one journalist on the ground in Australia who she had seen my work for Couturing. She put me forward for this job. Didn't mention it to me. So then I get an email from L'Oreal Paris in Paris being like, hey, can you submit a test piece for us? I think that was December 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was writing for them by January. So I spent 2014, I think, as a beauty writer for them. So I did 3 beauty articles a day. Then 2015, the editor left and I got promoted to editor. So I was doing 6 articles a day and wow. editing the other stuff. This was 2015, so I was doing that.
Okay.
I was still fashion editor at Couturing and I was finishing journalism at RMIT. Because while all of that was happening, I finished my Cert 4 and diploma at RMIT TAFE. Then I got into journalism at RMIT, which had always been the plan. Because I was already working, I was exempt from about half of the subjects, so I only had to do journalism part-time. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great. So
but
I was,
this goes to why you were saying to me that you probably didn't sleep in 2014.
No,
I
didn't.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't. So I was finishing journalism at RIT. I was editing L'Oreal's website, but on Paris time, so I would come home in the evenings and do that. And then I was editing all of Couturing's fashion content.
And then the thing with the Couturing that was interesting was you actually worked as a this is the thing that was most interesting for me was that C creative. Because
yeah.
I feel like that's where you learnt this is the model. This is the business model that takes this thing forward because...
I don't want to give them...
too much credit.
You know what? I learnt a lot from that. I learnt what I hate doing, mm-hmm. which is strategy.
Yeah.
I am not a strategy person. I deliver content. So I think what happened there towards the end of 2015, Couturing launched C Creative, which is their digital marketing company, because it is very difficult to make money just from a blog,
yeah,
particularly
it's near
at that
impossible.
Time. So they started doing amazing content for a number of different brands, realized that's where the money was, and Couturing at that point, I can say this because it's the truth, kind of fell by the wayside.
Mm.
I, end of 2015, had the option of staying on with L'Oreal or going full-time with Couturing and C Creative. I felt like I wanted to do that because working for L'Oreal, I would have been working remote and I wasn't ready to do that. I wanted to be in an office environment and to learn and, you know, there were all sorts of things that they were doing there that I didn't have experience in. So I thought there is more opportunity for me to learn and I think I was correct.
Yeah.
But what happened as 2016 went on, and I was there full time, I wasn't really writing fashion articles anymore. I was just doing marketing strategy. And I had a team underneath me and I loved that side of it. And I loved communicating with the client. What I didn't love was the Chinese whispers that would happen from a sales manager selling the client the package, then the sales manager telling me what the client wants,
yeah.
me having to tell my team. There was too much back and forth. I wanted to be the point of contact.
Yeah.
I got to work on the most amazing projects. We did a whole video series with Tony Matuszewski during Fashion Week. It nearly killed me, but it was that's when I started producing and directing and doing all of that. So I learned so much, but I also started to hate it because I sort of woke up one morning and I'm like, when did I stop writing?
Yeah.
I'm not writing anymore.
Well, that's what I was trying to piece together. Like, when it, what happened between Couturing and Glow Journal? How did you go, all right, I'm going to do my own writing? And mm-hmm. I know it was originally your own blog, right?
No.
It wasn't?
No.
No, it was copywriting before the blog.
Yeah. So what happened was I realized I wasn't writing anymore. I took on a few freelance copywriting clients all in the beauty space to just kind of scratch that itch because I realized there was a lot that happened in that year that led to Glow Journal. The first being I realized I wasn't writing anymore.
Mm.
The second being I realized I preferred beauty because fashion had changed so much.
Okay.
Fashion, when I started, I was interviewing designers. I was writing reviews on collections. I was going behind the scenes and doing all that. By 2016, thanks in a large part to Instagram, it was more about personal styling.
Okay.
Beauty, on the other hand, was still and still is about writing reviews, being as objective as possible.
Uh-huh.
That's what I loved about it. So I wanted to write. I wanted to be writing beauty. I was just not loving the workplace that I was in. Everyone around me saw it, but I just don't think you can recognize how bad a situation is until you take that step back.
Yeah. We all suffer from the introspection illusion.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
It got to a point where what I was earning, it wasn't the same as what I was earning from full-time work, but I looked at it and thought, okay, if you channel all of your energy into growing this copywriting business, you can do this full-time.
Yeah.
So I walked out of my job and then I signed 3 clients that afternoon.
Wow.
And then, went in and cleared my desk.
This is really interesting because all the I think you're like 2 years younger than I am.
I was 23 when I started my own business. Okay. I'm 26 now.
Yeah. So you're about 3 years younger than I am.
Sounds crazy when I say it out loud.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But so there's you, Shameless, and a few other people that I've interviewed, like North Borders and Seventh Era. They're like young photographers. And what is common amongst this is they took a chance really young.
Mm.
One, because they had the opportunity to be living at home.
Yes.
And that is, I get questions around this stuff all the time. I think if you've got that then and there, you should go.
Definitely.
As soon as you can.
Yeah.
And once you go full time, you sort of, it's like the world's your oyster.
Absolutely. Right? That's exactly what happened. And I had spent, networking is one of my superpowers. Like I was going to all of these events.
And they would have heard Gems now full time doing her own thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a big leap. But I don't know if you can say this about yourself, but you know what? Yes, I can. Those personality tests where it gives you your top 5 strengths, bravery is always number 1. And I think that's pretty spot on. Mm. At the time, it didn't feel brave. It felt like a necessity. I need to get out of this situation.
Yeah. That is totally understandable because it takes a lot of energy to do that.
Yeah.
And your brain is always thinking, what can I do to exert as little energy as possible?
Yeah.
So anytime you're doing anything and you're putting yourself out there that could potentially end in failure, you're like, fuck. Alarm bells ringing all the time.
I think just the timing was right. The stars aligned. I was miserable and I found a solution.
Yeah.
There's no point just moping.
What were those first lean years like? Or were there none?
Oh, it went pretty well pretty soon, if I'm honest. People are like, oh, how do I do my own business? But this is the thing, again, I'm so intuitive. I just, every step that I've taken along the way has been, like,
Do you know, it's really interesting how, I'm just totally fascinated by these women-dominated industries and how a lot of, if you consider a lot of, like, proper tech, deep tech industries, as an example, you speak to so many different founders or guys who are founders, and it takes so fucking long to do well.
Mm-hmm.
But in this industry, it's like there's just a plethora of opportunity, and you just have to really put yourself out there. Like yourself, Gemma, the Shameless Girls. A lot of people think, oh, what were those first lean years like? And everyone's come back and said, well, actually, you know, it was a thing that people wanted.
But it was the same with Shameless. They were ready.
Yeah.
They kept their job for the first, you know, couple of months of Shameless, so it wasn't a huge leap. It's a leap, and what they did is very brave, but it's not, you know.
Mm, the timing was perfect.
Yeah.
It's good to show how important timing can be sometimes.
But I also think, I guess lucky is the word. I found a niche really early on. There were a lot of copywriters in Melbourne, and there still are, but there weren't a lot who had A, industry connections already, and B, had an understanding of beauty. I love the science of it. I think that's my point of difference. And I get it.
Yeah. You are a very good bullshit detector.
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
Another superpower. So it started, I just wanted a website to function as a portfolio for my copywriting work to, you know, bring on new clients. And then my web designer said, well, so it's just jemkwatts.com at this point. Yeah. So she said it just feels like a waste of space to not have some sort of blog functionality on there. You're writing all these reviews on Instagram, better for SEO, so on and so forth. So, yeah, okay, I guess I'll do that. And then after about 6 months, I went, nah, got to take my name out of it, as most businesses do. You can't just – it can't be
– okay. So you were thinking about it – because I've delved with this a lot. Like, do you have the thing related to the brand or the person?
Yeah.
And that's a very hard thing to battle with depending on what you're doing.
So the way I see it and the way that I see the way my business is structured now is that Glow Journal is an umbrella. Beneath that umbrella are Glow Journal Creative, which is copywriting, photography and tone of voice development, glowjournal.com, which is the editorial platform, and then most recently the Glow Journal podcast. So that exists as an entity.
Yeah.
With three little
areas.
Tiers doesn't sound right because there would be a hierarchy. Jem K. Watts as a brand is separate.
Okay.
Yes, being Jem K. Watts from Glow Journal helps, and every part of the business feeds into another. For example, if I interview someone for the podcast, they find out I'm also a copywriter. Fantastic. We need someone to whip up a press release for us.
It's the greatest networking tool ever.
It really is.
Like, it's one of the only ways to truly, apart from Instagram, it is the only way to truly scale deep networks, I think.
Absolutely. So every part of the business, if you consider Jem K. Watts as a brand, that is the fourth tier of the business. They all feed into each other. If I'm doing a review of something on Instagram, my manager might upsell and say, okay, well, let's also get something on glowjournal.com.
Uh-huh.
They're all connected, but Glow Journal on its own could function when A, Instagram ceases to exist, and B, people don't care about me putting shit on my face anymore.
Yeah.
Or C, they don't want to hear me MC an event.
How much do you think people are buying into brand Gemma when they approach Glow Journal? Or does it depend on person to person?
Depends person to person. I think they're very much buying into Gemma, but the difference is Gemma as a brand, I don't think there's longevity there. I think I'm pretty realistic that, you just can't put all your eggs in one basket. And if Instagram dried up tomorrow, I still have a business that has three revenue streams.
Yeah. Are you on TikTok yet?
No, and I knew you were going to ask.
I can't help myself.
I might be 26. I am 100 years old. I cannot stress to you enough.
I am too.
I am an old lady. I feel like I've been on this planet before. I am an old soul. I am just a ghost floating around looking at all these young people going, what is TikTok? I thought it was the song of my schoolies experience. Apparently not.
I know what you mean. Like, I was wearing espadrilles last night. So I get the old man thing.
I love espadrilles.
They're great.
Yeah, I approve that.
And I feel like I've always been an old man at heart, but I don't know. There's something about this platform. It's fun. Do you know what I mean? Like, a lot
I'm having fun all the time anyway. I don't need more fun.
I guess I don't have enough fun. I need to go acquire more with some TikToks.
Everything I do is a good time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. I think that in the long run, people will move to this platform, in my opinion.
Sure.
So.
Well, they'll still need a copywriter, so.
They will.
I'm fine.
So, you've got the creative agency. Yeah. Or the copywriting agency.
Copywriting, photography, and tone of voice development. But that doesn't all roll off the tongue so easily. So.
No. If you were to think about percentages on a month-to-month...
Copywriting.
Or year-to-year basis, where are you spending your 80% of time?
Definitely copywriting. But I get them on board with the tone of voice development.
Okay. Interesting.
Mm. Which is, there's a bit of theatre to it because I'm tapping into a different voice all the time. So it's, yeah.
Do you think about the... I guess anyone would who runs a business, I know I do. Do you daydream? Do you find yourself when you're daydreaming in the shower and you think about the business, what are you thinking about it's going to be in 2, 3, or 5 years from now?
I don't think that far ahead. Okay. Zoe Foster-Blake puts it, you know, far more articulately than I can, but she was saying, like, as long as you're doing good work in this moment, you will be able to continue to create good things. I'm really happy with the way things are going now.
Mm.
I am at a point where I'm still deciding what growth means to me. I am in a position where I could bring on staff. I don't want to at this stage because I think a lot of the pull of Glow Journal Creative is that it's me. I do work with contractors, but for the copywriting side of things, it is me.
Yeah, because I was thinking about, does Gemma build out an agency that she then launches her own products?
That is something I'm asked all the time.
Yeah.
I would love to launch products. However, I haven't identified a gap in the market for anything.
Okay.
I never, and this goes for every single part of my business, I never want to pump something out just for the sake of it. Everything I do is connected to the business in some way. Things being on brand is my most used phrase, and I don't just do shit for the sake of it. So if I were to launch a product, why? I don't think I need to at the moment.
Yeah. But I was thinking more later on, but I can also see that if you did that, how many brands would want to continue working with you?
Yeah, oh, it definitely minimizes, you know, your capacity to earn. That doesn't bother me too much.
Yeah.
I look at the Frank girls, for example. They have Frank Body. They also have their first business, which is Willow and Blake, which is a copywriting business.
Uh-huh.
And they're still, they're fine.
That's, Lauren and I were cackling at that that shoot the other day that you did. Not the other day, but you did it. Maybe it was like a year or two ago.
The other day.
For Frank Bod. There was a line in there. Oh. This is
the one that was very like Vogue 73 questions.
Yeah, this was one of the other questions.
The other day, this was while I was still at Couturing. This is over 3 years ago.
Jesus. I was curious, does Gemma still have a trail of glitter wherever she goes?
That is still in my room, but glitter is so messy.
Is it? It's also so 2000s, is it not?
Yeah, but again,
glitter bombs the not so much.
Mm.
Yeah. I did. That was a thoroughly enjoyable video.
That was, yeah, I was still working as a fashion editor at that time.
Wow.
Plotting my exit.
Do you, when you think, what is the business of beauty to you? I mean, you have this podcast.
Mm.
I'm fascinated by because I think the majority of what you do seems to be around skincare rather than just beauty.
Yeah. So it's not the case so much now, but it kind of still is. There are two very different camps with beauty, and there is this very, the makeup artistry side of it, very heavily contoured, the Kardashian kind of look.
Yeah, yeah.
I respect that, and there is an art to that, but I hate the idea of girls thinking that they have to completely transform their face to receive validation. So my philosophy on beauty is, which sounds hypocritical because beauty, the essence of it is to change the way that you look, whether that is changing the texture of your skin, something simple like that, or whatever.
But you've got a good line where it's really about enhancing what's already there.
100. I live by that.
Yeah.
Absolutely live by that. And that's what skincare does.
Yeah.
So that's my love. And there's a lot more science to skincare, which I also love. But yeah, I value transparency in everything, not just in beauty, but in every part of my life. And I felt when I first started, there was a real lack of that in beauty commentary. There are still people on Instagram posting things that I know they haven't tried because I've received the same PR send out saying, hey, can you get this content up by the end of the week? I have a really strict clause with every brand that I work with that they have to give me at least 3 weeks to try a product before I even say, yeah, I'll review it.
Yeah.
Even if it's
paid.
So you
can actually road test it.
Yeah, I have a full diary that's color-coded with what I'm trying at any really? Moment. So if I see a change in the skin, I can isolate which product has caused it.
Wow. I would you love to see a photo of that.
Well, I'm done. I will provide
really
you with
like
that.
I would really like to see how that's mapped out.
Yeah. So that's the way that I work. To me, that fit, like, how else can you work? How else can you know what a product is doing? It's still not the case across the board. But I think that's another point of difference.
Interesting.
And lying takes so much energy.
Yeah, because you've got to maintain the lie.
Yeah.
That's very, very hard.
It's not for
me. I used to be at times when I was at that high school stage, lying was a very interesting tool.
Okay.
But yeah, I realized very early on that some people start to notice faults
you'll
in
slip
what
up.
You're saying. You always slip up.
Yeah.
But The beauty industry is interesting to me because I've been fascinated by particularly Jeffree Star. I know we were chatting about this on Instagram.
Yeah.
Because he was a MySpace guy and then I don't know what, like he was a singer.
Okay. I don't know a great deal about him.
Yeah. He was a singer.
Uh-huh.
And his whole shtick is he's obviously gay, but I don't know if he'd call himself he's definitely not trans, but he dresses very effeminately.
Yes.
Very, very effeminately.
Oh, and his skin is beautiful.
Yeah, and so like makeup was his thing back in the MySpace days.
Mm.
And I remember watching The Secret Life of Jeffree Star by Shane Dawson.
I watched a bit of that.
Yeah. I found it really, really interesting because, I mean, this guy's built an empire. Like, we're talking a business that probably does $300 million a year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily.
And then you've got the Kylie Jenners of the world. And I don't like it how people say, well, she sort of inherited money. Well, you still got to sort of execute on it.
You do.
Like, you can't just have a $1 billion company and just have it all inherited. Mm. You've got to have someone behind you or some sort of strategy there.
Yeah.
Which is obviously Kris
Jenner. When people are like, she's which Kardashian genius. Are you? Kris. Yeah. That's the best one. I don't watch the show, but
I would love to interview her. She's a very smart media brain.
Yeah.
Like, think about it. She's minted two girls now.
Yeah.
Kylie and
Kimmy K.
Kimmy K. So thinking about what's been going on, it's obvious that a lot of the industry is driven by building an audience, influencing, and then marketing to that group of people.
Yeah.
There's also a tech element. There's the whole drop shipping. Like, I don't think a lot of these people really, none of them manufacture themselves. They have manufacturing partners. It's sort of the Apple model.
Mm-hmm.
How have you seen the business models change? What do you think is the upcoming business model in this space over the next few years?
I have no idea because it changes so often.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm in a position to say what will and won't happen in beauty. I do think it's so easy for a celebrity or an influencer or whoever they may be to slap their name on a product now.
Yeah.
So I don't think that's going to slow down.
And, you know, you said before you've got this real scientific approach and there are certain brands that have maintained for decades.
Yeah.
You know, like I feel like you've done a few things with Estee Lauder and they seem to be around still to this day. I remember my mum would always use, I always be fascinated by the package of Estee Lauder.
There's a real experience to beauty that I love. That's what I do a lot in the luxury beauty space.
Yeah.
Because I love it. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this with a girl this morning about how I will have people saying, oh, but can you do something affordable? Sure. And I do use affordable skincare, but that's not what Glow Journal is.
It's about the best.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole...
Or stuff that works.
The tagline is beauty curated. I'm not just reviewing product here, there, everywhere. What I love about luxury beauty is the experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like meditative.
So do you find, are there particular models or are there particular things that stand out from the brands that have maintained that scientific approach in the industry at all?
Honestly, marketing. The reason you are still thinking about Estee Lauder is because their marketing team are very clever. That is why it's in your mind. Mm-hmm. If the products were crap, we wouldn't still be talking about them. So they're obviously good, but it's marketing. There's a lot of good products out there that are, you know, as good as, you know, whatever you've seen your mum using for years.
Yeah.
But it's marketing.
Yeah, it's like Dan Monheit, who was on the show. He runs an agency called Hard Hat, and he's like, advertising only highlights a shit product quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good point.
Well, this is why I hated doing strategy, because when I was doing C Creative, working on the marketing side of things, I can – and Jen Day has spoken about this. You can guarantee a post is going to be seen by X number of people. – At no point can I guarantee you sales.
Uh-huh.
This is for a social media manager.
Yeah.
I cannot guarantee sales. It just, it doesn't work like that.
We've had, because we're representing a few podcasts now for getting them ad spots. And it's always interesting to see, like, the ROI question is always a thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I can't tell you what the click-through rate will be.
No.
Like, if it's a shit product, if it's a shit offer, the audience doesn't like it.
People might buy it the first time, but they're not going to be a repeat purchaser.
Exactly.
I know that Jem K. Watts can sell a product.
Yeah.
Because
if it's a good product.
Yeah, but I wouldn't promote a product if it was crap.
Yeah.
And people know that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a trust there. This is not to minimize what fashion bloggers do, because a lot of my friends work in fashion and I have so much respect for that. But there doesn't need to be the element of trust necessarily. I don't know where I've used this analogy before, but if a woman walked past me on the street and was wearing an amazing jacket, if I loved that jacket and went up to her and said, "Where did you get that?" There is no relationship there. If I like the jacket, I'm going to buy the jacket. If that same woman walked past me and turned around and said, "You must try this moisturizer. I've been using it for the last 3 weeks. It has completely changed my skin," I'm going to have a few questions. There's no, I don't know you. There is no trust there. You cannot sell a beauty product without a bit of trust.
Yeah. Men.
Yeah.
In this area. I feel like our audience is like, I think it's, if you look at, it depends on the platform, right? Mm-hmm. Like Instagram is pretty much 50-50, but I feel like the audience skew is like 60-40 to men. And men's skincare has always been interesting to me. I've always loved or looking at those brands that are out there, the Aesops of the world, and how they target men with certain products, which is sort of like a rebranded version of the women's
Aesop option. That's pronounced.
Aesop, sorry. Aesop's Fables.
They have a really clever way of...
very fucking smart marketing.
Well, they've never said this product will change your skin. No. They're just like, this is a nice product to use.
It's no different if you look at the back of the label of a brand like Sukin.
Yes.
Is it Sukin or Sirkin? Sukin.
It's Sukin.
Very, very similar.
Yeah.
In terms of the mixology, I guess, that's in it. What are the biggest mistakes you think men make? Like, what advice do you give to your partner?
Oh, my God. He's so lazy. He's just...
Define lazy.
Well, he just does sweet FA. I'm like, put some fucking sunscreen on. You are a carpenter.
Okay.
He does it once in the morning and then sweats it off and says, "Why is my nose sunburnt?"
Wow.
Well, you're Irish for starters and you put your sunscreen on first thing in the morning.
What else doesn't he do well? Does he exfoliate?
He is now, because I got him onto it and he's like, "Oh, I like this." And men are very easy to manipulate. I'll know that he's used the product and I'll be like, "Oh my God, you look so handsome." Very easy to do. So he's better now, but...
Mm. Yeah, my routine is... Lauren hates it. I use products... I don't get the whole, like, differentiation between products that can be used on the body versus the face.
Different skin, different pH level.
Really?
Yeah.
There is science to that?
Mm.
Okay.
It's thicker.
Okay.
I don't fake tan my face. I look like a fucking French mime when I don't have makeup on, because it's just white and then a very different color from the neck down.
Because I have definitely used the Aesop body exfoliator on my, like, I just use it for face and body.
Mm.
And the
okay.
What's the classic sort of I would have to show you the brand. It's like that one that you've seen for, it's not Solvoline. Thinking of
Sorbeline.
Maybe it was Sorbeline.
Mm.
I don't know. It's like one of those classic non-soapy.
I know what you're going to say.
I've definitely used that on my face.
I have to leave.
But my,
I feel like
Although something is better than nothing, I will say that.
I don't know if my skin's good because I've inherited good skin.
Genetics play a massive part.
Yeah.
But then also...
What you eat?
Yeah. Yep. That plays
how
a part.
How often you sleep?
Yep. There's all sorts of factors.
I have a lot of olive oil. Like a lot.
Yeah, that's good. Omega-3 fatty acids.
Yeah. Mwah. So I have like probably at least a liter and a bit a week.
Jesus.
Yeah.
In what?
Just everything. It's just okay. On everything. I it's just like... That. Greeks, you know, you've got a tin, yeah. 2 liter tin in the cupboard.
Okay.
Each week,
but I mean, we do too. But that's just because we know we're going to have people over 3 times a week, and we need to do a platter.
Yeah, Lauren's always surprised. I marinate a lot of things in olive oil.
Yeah, that's good.
Including my face. I'm just kidding.
Which it's not the worst thing.
It could be worse.
There's olive squalene that like mimics the oil that your skin produces naturally. So that particular ingredient, if you isolate it, is quite... Anyway.
Yeah. Another thing that Lauren's got me onto is... I've had it for ages now though because I've got sort of a more pronounced nose and you can get...
Euro.
Yeah, Euro nose. The good schnoz. Good profile on the schnoz. Uh-huh. And what's that? It's like a mask, yeah?
Yeah. Like, what...
It's like
like a mask.
It's like a mask that you put on your face and it makes your face like really stiff, but then it cleans
okay,
out
so
all your pores.
It's a clay mask.
It's
yeah.
a clay mask. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but then you have to like follow gray. That up with something hydrating.
Yes.
Good.
Otherwise, you get really, really dry, mm-hmm. particularly during winter.
Yeah. The
But that shit's like magic.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing with products like that, particularly for acne-prone skin, is instinct tells you, okay, I've got to dry it out because oil causes acne. You dry it out too much, you strip the skin of that protective barrier, and then your skin just becomes like a petri dish for bacteria.
Really?
That's why I don't like a lot, not all, but a lot of foaming cleansers, mm-hmm. and particularly the way they market to teens is like foaming cleanser, tone, usually something acidic, then a really light moisturizer. It's just making it worse.
Uh-huh. I know Lauren has been saying, like, I can't wait till Gemma comes over because I've got a million and one questions.
She's got beautiful skin.
I know, right? But she's...
This is just a Lauren love fest. I mean, she's cool. She, I'm just going to make up all of you, Mike.
That's all right. She's been whinging about... I honestly reckon it's just the pill. The pill really fucks you up.
I've been on it for 9 years.
She went off it and then she went back on. I think it was a bad idea. Bad. I think she just should have come off it for a period of time and then...
I mean, it depends because a lot of my friends like, oh, I get mood swings when I'm on the pill, so I'm going to go off it. I'm a bitch all the time, so I don't think I'm getting mood swings. Mm-hmm. I don't think I was less of a bitch before I went on the pill.
It's sort of no different to taking like an SSRI, if you think about it. It changes your hormones.
Yeah.
It's pretty gnarly.
But I just... Like, I'm super in tune with my skin and my body and all of that. Like, you just know. If something's awry, you know. Yeah.
And you generally know what it is because you can sort of connect it to what has happened in Correct. The last few weeks, yeah. month, whatever it may be.
Well, the only real, like, my skin, I had a huge breakout in May of 2016. And I went to the dermatologist and I was like... Hey, what's going on with my skin? And then she asked about what I'd been up to. And I'm like, well, I've just spent the last 2.5 weeks in Sydney. I've been working around the clock, but we produced 15 amazing videos. And she's like, cool, it's stress.
Yeah. So how do you, when you know that you're being impacted by stress, how do you reduce that for you personally?
I don't stress a lot. I'm pretty unflappable. But I again, everything, no, it's knowing your skin, it's knowing your body. If I'm feeling a little bit tense, I have to get outside.
Okay.
That's what works for me.
Do you regularly take running a business, do you take time off?
Yeah, sometimes. Not as much as I should. I'm pretty good at switching off now. I wasn't. But sometimes, it sounds bad and it's the opposite of what everyone tells you to do. Sometimes I think when you're starting a business, go hard with it.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate now that I can, you know, just sort of sit and enjoy when I want to. Uh-huh. Like, I'm not really working today.
Yeah.
Cool. Did extra work yesterday.
Yeah. And today, like, you've gone to an event, you've got this. It sort of is a little bit of work, but I can see how when you're doing this sort of stuff, it's actually quite enjoyable.
Yeah.
It's very, very enjoyable.
I like talking. Yeah. That's what it is.
What's your favorite thing to talk about that isn't makeup, influence, or marketing?
I don't know if there's a topic because I think it depends on who I'm talking to. I've got girlfriends from when I danced and I love talking to them about the theatre. And then I've got friends that I went to school with who are starting families and stuff. So we talk about our futures and stuff like that. I think it just depends. Yeah. I don't go into conversations with the topic ready to go. I'm not a cue card girl.
Yeah. And it's funny, like,
I love to talk about the theatre, though. That's now that I've said that.
Noticed that every guest, they sort of have like a really, oftentimes a very niche hobby that no one is aware that they have. But I feel like you're quite an open book with a lot of things that you do. I guess you have to be when you're per se influencing.
I don't know that I have to be. I know that, and you get a lot more followers and cultivate a bigger audience if you are super open about everything that you're doing. But again, it's not on brand.
Yeah.
It's not part of the Glow Journal brand.
You have strategically done that well. Like I don't think I've ever seen your partner or parents.
No, ever. He doesn't have social media.
Okay.
He has a Facebook, but he just uses it to tag me in Batuta Advocate posts.
Sounds like a good lad.
Yeah. And my parents, I'll occasionally film them when they're dancing. They're really good dancers.
Okay.
Or if they're like saying something funny.
Why? When did you make that decision and why?
Never. It's all. I never made the decision. Everything I do is intuition. Everything I do work wise is digital.
Mm-hmm.
All of it, except when I'm taking photos, which is still obviously digital, but photography, like I still take photos as a hobby.
What do you shoot on now?
I mean, my camera is like a Canon situation, but I have all these cameras. I don't know what they are. Most of the film ones are Canon, but shooting analog just really gets me going. I just don't post a lot of what I'm doing outside of work things, because when I'm with my family, I'm with my partner, I'm with my friends, that's what I'm doing.
And you want to be present.
Yeah.
I think it's a very powerful intuition. It's very, very hard. Like, I don't think that comes with that unflappableness of your nature where you just don't really give a fuck. Because if you cared, then you're probably more inclined to go post that shit.
The only conscious sort of part of it is if I don't get a lot of criticism, fortunate because I'm not posting anything controversial. But if I do receive criticism, it's going to be about the business, the brand that I am running, being Glow Journal. If I was posting, it's kind of me just being a little bit guarded, because if I was posting a lot about myself and my life, this, that, and the other, that criticism would be an attack on my character, and I don't want to be open to that.
Yeah,
I don't need to be. It's like when people talk about the dangers of social media, I'm not really opening myself up to that.
Yeah. I feel like phones are really just a black mirror as per the series.
Mm.
Like, they really just highlight things that maybe you don't want to look at.
Yeah. I'm just pretty good at compartmentalizing. I just, It's like why I like personality typing. Put people in their box and just
but you're
shut
not,
the lid.
You're not a worrier. I can tell that you're not much of a warrior.
So what's the point?
Yeah.
It's not productive.
I know you mean. I feel like there's a genetic element to that. Like my family are warriors, without a doubt.
Mine. Oh, my dad's just, we call him Doubting Thomas. I don't know where that came from. His name is not Thomas. I think it's just because he's cautious.
Okay.
In year 11, when I said I'm not doing maths, Mum was like, you do you. And Dad was like, damn, come on.
See, my dad would freak out. I think he inherited that from his mother.
Okay.
Yeah. There's definitely some hereditary thing there.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
But I think, again, with my parents, I'm pretty confident. I know what I'm doing at any time.
On the point of influence,
because
it is an element of your job, although I think, you know, you get defined often as an influencer, but I really think that you're just clearly an entrepreneur, and this is a part of what you do.
I don't have an issue with the term influencer, because to be an influencer means you have influence. Yeah. If I don't have influence, I'm not selling the product.
You have to be important in some way.
Yeah, I like to think I am.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Clip that.
I will take that.
What have you, like, I guess I'm curious as to how you first learned that this, because obviously you would have gone on Instagram like 2012, 13 when everyone was piling on.
I was a little late.
Okay.
Which, when I say late, I feel like it was maybe 6 months because I had a shit phone.
When did you realize that you could influence people? Like, when did you go from 1,000 to 10,000? And do you think it was really pivoting to that beauty element? That's when people started to take notice?
I think there were two waves. I think the first was I had a really interesting job being a fashion editor. And I think being a 19-year-old fashion editor, people thought that was a bit cool. So they wanted to see what I was doing. And if I was, that's when I was going to events all the time and doing interviews all the time. And I would post
about it.
Yeah. So that was fascinating to people, I think. The second wave was when I started doing these beauty reviews, which is when I was still in marketing, because there was a gap for that kind of content. So when people realized they could trust me, that's when they got on board. That said, I'm still a micro influencer. That doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Okay.
Numbers don't faze me.
Yeah, numbers don't mean shit. I mean, at the end of the day, I think we were chatting about this before you came over. It's strange when, I mean, we've got a very small audience, I feel, on Instagram.
But they care.
They care better. A lot. Yeah. It's very interesting. Like, I was at this event and someone came up and
yeah, you were saying you can't believe people listen.
Well, like, all you see is, like,
it's humbling.
It's very humbling. Like, you know, I think we have, like, 3,000 unique listeners. I don't know what the downloads are because the downloads are just, like, fucking this all the time. But I really like seeing how many unique people are listening every week.
Yeah, same.
And I don't know. It's just, it's so hard to tell. But then
that's a nice number though. Don't compare it to Shameless.
No, I won't at all. No, Shameless are just on another level.
I love them so much.
But I mean, we've represented a few podcasts, and you actually realize that we're quite close there. But you know, I also realize I'm not doing this full time.
Like exactly.
I work 4 days a week in finance. On top of this, so sleep is definitely.
It's not an non-existent option.
But it's interesting when people message you and they tell you, like, you must get it all the time. You must be constantly. I can see why you're happy.
It's really nice
because you're just like, this is nice.
Yeah, it is. It is nice. But I think I'm pretty approachable.
Yeah.
So people feel like they're a mate, even if what I am posting is like. Product reviews and bachelor updates, they feel like, because I'm funny. That's what it is.
The comedic thing is, like, what is it? Scott Adams has this thing, like, if you can combine a few features together, then that creates a uniqueness. I think the comedic element is definitely there.
Mm.
The entrepreneurial element and the beauty element. You pair those three together, I don't think there's many other people like Gemma Watts.
Thank you. I don't think so either.
I think
Christ.
But so many people just want to really, really niche down on one thing. And I think it's better to be not so much a generalist, but a specialist and a generalist. And you pair these things together.
Well, I think the idea of something being niche has become warped because your point of difference can be as simple as just your voice. Mm. And that's what it is for me. I write in the way that I speak. As long as you're just, you know, doing your thing.
Who cares?
Yeah.
Speaking of finding your voice, one of the things I wanted to ask you about is your process.
Oh, God, I thought you were about to ask about singing.
No. No, I found it funny. You did post. That was one of the few things you have posted of your personal life is you sort of jazz handing along a stage somewhere.
Oh, that was – I was hammered the other night with one of my best friend and her sister. We all danced together. I was fucking good.
Yeah, what was the show?
That was like our end of year dance concert. That was 10 years ago.
For some reason, I thought it was Cats, but I'm like, nah, they weren't wearing any headpieces.
No.
It was just something that you made up.
No, we were teachers.
Okay. But it was a dance that you'd configured for this end of year thing.
That we were taught.
Okay.
I forget people didn't all do dancing. The way a dance school works is you have a class.
Yeah.
And then the teacher teaches you. Dances, and then at the end of the year, you will have several dances, different costumes, and there is a show.
Uh huh. Have you ever done one of those K-pop sort of studio? Have you ever gone down to one of those K-pop?
No, I haven't. Lauren, I still dance when I can now, not as often as I'd like. But
when we finish
K-pop.
Up, make sure you ask Lauren about that. Oh she God, went down to sort of Chinatown, Elizabeth Street area, and she was the only white girl there, and everyone looked at her like, "What the fuck are you doing here?"
Amazing.
Because she wanted to do dancing classes.
Oh, send her to the space.
The space. Where's the space?
Off Chapel Street. It's sensational.
Okay. Well, we'll have to. She'll definitely be footnoting that then because she'll want to go. But on the point of process, because this is the thing I want to ask you before we get into our rapid fire questions.
Yeah.
Is writing, like I said before, you're collecting your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I'd assume, you know, every time I come to an interview, I have a process.
Yeah.
How do you think about copywriting and collecting your thoughts maybe before an interview as well?
I mean, it's just research. If it's copywriting, usually I will have, the brand will have sent over some background and stuff on their tone of voice. I love when I get to build that from scratch.
Uh-huh.
And there's a whole process of identifying the other people playing in that sphere, working out who their girl is or man, but usually
storyboarding and all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
It's that old thing of, I, Jen talked about it as well. It's a person, and then I go, okay, how does that person speak?
Okay. So you map back from that individual you've got in your head.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which again, theater. So then when I have to type as that person, uh-huh, I'm playing that character, which Josh and Tommy think is hysterical because one of my clients is like a 40-year-old mom and toxin free. I'm sitting there pouring acids on my face. and then with the podcast, it's, I would imagine our processes are pretty similar. It's just research.
Yeah.
What do I feel like talking to this person about? And then off we go.
Preparation prevents piss poor performance.
Yes. Always. Yeah. I've forgotten about that. But yeah.
I remember, basically, when I was learning to do this at the start, I looked up some of the better interviewers over the years. Mm. And Charlie Rose was someone I looked up to until, mm-hmm, it became a serial predator.
Yeah, that'll do it almost every time.
But his whole thing in the one interview that he did, mm-hmm, was preparation. Like, I just consume, yeah, like I said to you, I've consumed probably every fucking interview that you've done.
Yeah, that's at so each wild difference, to me.
Every video, like every platform that exists.
Jesus.
I've consumed it, and that's the only way to do it. And then you sort of see like how the conversation goes. Like,
yeah.
Do you often get into interviews and be like you were disappointed in the interview? Have you ever had that?
Nah, not really. Because I just like talking to people and I like talking about myself.
Yeah.
If I get to do
it's
that.
Pretty, it's Ooh. Pretty good to get Party more or time. Less paid to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like indirectly.
Yeah, that's why I love emceeing. No one wants to do it.
It's bizarre.
I have not a whole lot of competition, particularly in the beauty space.
We did a call, like we do branded podcasts for people, and I didn't want to host this podcast, and I kept, like I just put out a ridiculous number. Like it was close to $1,000 an hour,
mm-hmm,
for interviewing.
Ripper. It's easy
and
to
they
do.
And they came back and like, yeah, sure.
I charge more than that for emceeing.
Yeah.
Mm.
I should get into emceeing.
You should.
There you go, guys. All right. Let's jump into some rapid fire questions. So we just hit under an hour and a half.
Now, I've listened to these rapid fire questions.
Have
they
you?
Are slow fire.
They are definitely slow fire because I ask them and then people really waffle on.
Yeah.
Particularly if your name ends in Jansen.
Who could it be?
Who could it be? That was the funniest fucking thing. I remember because you guys.
God, I've just read one thing upside down.
Get
on the bottom.
Photo together. Everyone says that. There we go.
The first time I went on the Daily Talk Show, they were like, "We've got to get a photo." They forgot, and then they got me to send them a selfie on the bus home.
Oh my God!
It was pretty perfect.
The one time I haven't taken a photo with someone was Paul Roos, and he bailed out of here because he had to go film down at the Fox Studios, but he didn't say anything in the interview. I'm like, "Oh, can we keep going?" He's like, "Yeah, it's fine." And then as soon as we were done, he was fucking out. Like, I've never seen someone move so quick. Oh, and he's like, "Oh, yeah, I'm half an hour late." I'm like, "Why didn't you say anything?"
Yeah, you had an option.
What the fuck? All right. Fast, what's your morning routine?
I'm going to waffle. It depends on what I've got on for the day. Less where I have to be, more how much makeup and hair I have to put on.
Okay.
Ideally, up at 6:30, get outside. I live very close to like beautiful walking tracks. I will walk. That is my version of meditation. And then I will run. The walking is for mental health. The running is endorphins.
Okay.
Go home, coffee.
Bang. And then you get into it.
Yeah.
What about evening? What does your evening routine look like?
It is skincare. It's wine and skincare and going through my little checklist of what I'm trying.
Okay. Mm. Drink of choice?
Ooh, all of them except Ouzo.
Really?
I love a Negroni. That's my poison.
Okay. I'll have to, at one point in the future, we'll have to take you to get a... Which part of Melbourne do you live?
Mont Albert.
Okay. So, Alaros in Camberwell may be not hood. Far from you.
Yeah.
That's an unfortunate thing. Like, people say, like, obviously with that Greek background, people say Ouzo horrible. They just haven't had good Ouzo, unfortunately.
I love tequila.
Do you like aniseed?
No.
Okay. That may be a do you like mint?
Yeah.
Okay. Because there's this thing called mastiha. Mastika means to masticate, to eat.
Yes.
There's a...
Tommy taught me that word because I was like, what are you talking about?
Masticating?
Yeah.
Stop fucking masticating, will you?
Isn't yeah. Fat Fridays?
People used to say that at my old work at the press club all the time as a joke. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mastika is like a really, really nice Greek spirit.
Okay.
But no one knows about it. Mm. Anyway, what's in the fridge at home?
Wine.
Okay.
We have a separate wine fridge.
Which type of wine are you drinking of late?
I'm actually, so now that the weather's warming up, I love white, but I like a dry white. I like a Pinot Gris.
Okay, lovely.
My mother, when I was in high school, she worked as in admin for a wine wholesaler. So wine is like what we have in common.
Yeah. Is she like the ice in the wine type of person?
Yeah. She doesn't drink red, but Dad and I love a red.
Okay. Yeah. Lauren's mum loves a rosé with few glasses of ice, but
I'm bringing back Matus. That's my goal for summer.
Rose. I've always so been a big old fan school. Of rosé.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful rosé that you get in the south of France that they just call claret.
Ooh.
Yeah.
There's stunning. One from the Yarra Valley that I love. Helen's Hill is the winery, and it's beautiful and dry. I don't like anything sweet.
Okay. You should try. You would like. There's a wine called Jumpin' Juice.
Okay.
It's Pinot blended with 5% of Sauvignon Blanc.
And okay.
It's really fucking good.
Interesting.
Like, really good to have in autumn or spring, I find.
Okay, I can do that.
We'll have to send you a bottle. If you had to gift a book to the audience, one book for Christmas, what would it be and why?
Oh, it's a bit fucked up, but Lolita.
Okay.
It's one of my favourites ever.
Could never get through it.
Really?
I just find that those Russian sort of novelists too, not miserable, but they're so dry.
Yeah, I think that's why I liked it. I just...
So you're a Penguin Classics type of girl.
I'm actually a thriller type of girl, but that's Penguin Classics is sort of what got me hooked. But I just love the way Lolita's written. And, like, it's a fucked up story.
It's a weird story.
But the way
story.
It's written, I don't know how they've made it. So I don't know. It's clever.
Yeah.
It's just clever.
Yeah, we've got a few of those Penguin Classics. We've got Lady Charlotte's Lover, Brideshead Revisited, A Year in Provence. I've always loved that.
Yeah, okay.
They made that into a movie with Russell Crowe. And who's that? Who's that French actress who did that bit on SNL with the forehead tétés? Forehead tétés? And she had like miniature boobs on her forehead.
Oh, I'm not sure. Normally I'm
Marion Cotillard.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen this episode that of is SNL.
That is hilarious.
I'm an SNL fanatic.
Maybe it wasn't SNL. I don't know.
It might have been.
All right. Last question. If you could have a billboard anywhere in Melbourne.
You know what?
Where would it be and what would it say?
The expensive one that I was just at this morning above, is it above Young and Jackson? Corner of Flinders and Swanston.
The new digital one. Yeah. The wraparound.
Yeah.
That's a nice billboard.
Yeah, it is. That's the most expensive one in Victoria.
Is it?
I read that recently. And I would have, I know this wasn't the question, it would be like the, I'm trying to draw it with my hands. It would have like the Glow Journal branding on it, but the image would just be like a close-up of skin. So it's just like a bit abstract, but I feel like skin is sexy and people would be like, oh, what is this? And then they would Google it.
I feel like there's an ASMR channel paired with video of skin for you. Because that was one of the reviews, which was the funniest fucking thing.
It's my friend Jackie saying I have a voice for ASMR. I get that all the time. I know my unboxings give people the shits, but a lot of people are like, this is the ASMR content that I needed today.
You should do it. It'd be quite funny. Just even add a comedic flair to it. Put it on TikTok. That.
Oh my God. I get the ASMR thing all the time. I think it's because I have like a low register.
Yeah, that's why it's when you talk like really low.
Yeah, that's my all of my singing is like jazz. Really? For that reason, alto.
Yeah, I don't know. I've had someone say it to me. I don't fucking get it at all. I think I've got a strain. It's still something that I've never gotten used to. Is it seeing myself on camera and audio?
Well, I'm thrilled because this side of my face is the good side. This is the side that I'm like, yeah, I like her. And then the other side, who are you?
I've never understood that ever. The whole sides thing. But look, Gemma, thank you for coming in.
Pleasure.
I know you're busy. We were jumping around with dates for so long.
Yeah, we were. Hey.
Yeah. It's made a bit it of work. A pain. But look, thanks for coming in. Where can people find you and Glow Journal?
My Instagram is at GemKWatts. Okay. You can also find me at glow.journal or at glow.journal.creative. Mm-hmm. And the websites are glowjournal.com, glowjournalcreative.com, and the Glow Journal podcast. Good Gemma. For SEO, keeping that branding consistent.
Smash it. Good SEO. I think Joshy Jansen will be very happy.
He is.
Gemma, thanks for coming in.
Pleasure.
Thank you for making it to the end. Before you run off, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode or do leave us a rating. For Instagram, go follow us on @uncommon_podcast. For YouTube, search Uncommon Podcast and don't forget to subscribe if you're watching this video. Also give us a like or leave a comment on what you thought about the episode. But until next time, thanks so much for listening. This podcast is brought to you by Neural Media. Are you an entrepreneur or marketer who needs help making podcasts, video, or animation? Perhaps you don't have time to manage a freelancer or the budget to deal with an agency. Well, Neural Media can help you with simple and affordable content creation, saving you time and money by taking away the pain of producing that content. To learn more, head to neural.com/media. That's neural.com/media, play around with our pricing or request a callback directly. Listeners to the show receive a special discount by using the promo code UNCOMMON.